All right. Well, hello, everyone. Yeah, it's kind of funny because I don't know if the internet's back on at the retreat house or not, but the internet went out in the retreat house today. And then I came home and I thought, oh, well, I'll get some work done that I couldn't do there because there was no internet. And I had no internet here. And it's two different companies. Yeah, because it's CECOM over there and it's CenturyLink here. Both were down. So isn't that weird? But it's back up now. So here I am. We are here a little early for I Am That. And I am starting on page 53. By the way, our natural meditation retreat is filling up. Yeah. Yeah, it's filling up. We have, not including Shauna, Cheryl, and Jacqueline, because they don't count. We have four people. They don't count because they're always going to be there, right? That's why they don't count. They don't count because you can count on them. That's why they don't count. But we have four people. So we have both of the downstairs rooms rented, the lakeside and the mountainside, and one of the ladies' dorms beds rented. So there's two ladies' dorms rooms still available. But there's almost no beds left. So it's pretty full. Last week we were looking at a Nisargadatta. By the way, the retreat that's nearly full is based on Nisargadatta's teachings. Yeah, it's the natural meditation retreat is based on his teachings. But last week we were looking at this, and Nisargadatta and a devotee that's sitting in front of him had agreed on some criteria by which they were going to look at, what is consciousness. And the criteria was they're going to look at the waking state and the dreaming state, not the sleeping state, because the man, of course, can't remember his experience of consciousness during the sleeping state. And since he can't remember that, they're just not even going to consider it, which is kind of interesting because that's usually where Ramana Maharshi and Nisargadatta Maharaj point when they're talking about what the true state of consciousness is like. They point to the deep sleep state. And in fact, you'll find both Nisargadatta Maharaj and Ramana Maharshi talking about the true self as being like awake in deep sleep. Awake in deep sleep. So it's interesting that Nisargadatta has agreed to ignore the deep sleep state with this particular devotee, since that's usually what he points to as the best example of consciousness or true self. So this is right after Nisargadatta has stated the criteria that we will look at dreams and the waking state. And the questioner says, agreed, I am a person in conscious relation with a world. Now that's kind of interesting because that's not true. So his first statement, the first statement that he makes after Nisargadatta sets up the criteria, or actually Nisargadatta is agreeing to the criteria that the devotee set up. He agrees to the criteria and then he says, I am a person in conscious relation with a world. And last week or 2 weeks ago, the last time I was here for I Am That, all that Nisargadatta was trying to teach this man was that he's not a person, right? And he starts off with this statement. So let's see where this goes. So Nisargadatta says, are the world and the conscious relation with it essential to your being a person? So again, he's still trying to get this man to look at the idea that he's a person. He's just using different inquiry to try and get him to look at that. Are the world and the conscious relation with it essential to your being a person? And the questioner says, even confined in a cave, I remain a person. So the way I read that answer is is that the questioner is saying, even if I'm not interacting with the world, I'm still a person. So he's really stuck on this idea, I'm a person, right? Even confined in a cave, I remain a person. Nisargadatta says, it implies a body and a cave and a world in which they can exist, which is true. That cave would be in a world, right? The questioner says, yes, I see. The world and the consciousness of the world are essential to my existence as a person. Now, that's a pretty important point that Nisargadatta has just got him to admit to. Now, whether it can go any further with this particular devotee or not, I don't know. But in order for me or you to see ourselves as a person, we also have to see ourselves as a body in a world. If you could imagine for a moment that you were consciousness, but you never ever experienced a body, you never ever experienced a world, it was just kind of consciousness with no objects. We'll call it consciousness within a void, or consciousness within a blackness, a black space, but no objects. You did not ever see a body. You did not ever see a world. You probably would not think of yourself as a person, right? So the idea that you are a person is in relationship of a body to a world, a body that you call me, in relationship to a world. That's a part of the idea that you're a person. So this is a pretty significant admission that Nisargadatta has gotten this man to. He says, yes, I see. The world and the consciousness of the world are essential to my existence as a person. Nisargadatta says, this makes the person part and parcel of the world, or vice versa. The two are one. So again, if a relationship to the world is essential to the idea that you're a person, then you really can't separate the world and the person. Whatever the world is, the person is. Whatever the person is, the world is. You can't separate them. This makes the person part and parcel of the world, or vice versa. The two are one. And the questioner says, consciousness stands alone. The person and the world appear in consciousness. Now, that's pretty enlightened for this particular questioner. It's kind of like a complete turn. It makes me wonder if he's just spouting something he learned somewhere, because... You know, it's so different than everything he's set up until this point. Consciousness stands alone. The person and the world appear in consciousness. So that's true. But I don't know that this is his experience, because just a moment ago he was telling us, you know, that he's a person, right? I am a person. And you don't really perceive yourself as a person and as consciousness at the same time. You really see yourself as one or the other. Either you see yourself as consciousness or you see yourself as a person. However, it's very possible to see yourself as a person and spout out things like I am consciousness, because you've heard them, you've learned them, right? But it's not actually your experience. Your experience is still that of being a person with some intellectual knowledge about truth. Excuse me, I just finished eating. I rushed right in here after eating, as Don knows. She called me, asked me if I could start early. And I'm like, well, I'm eating dinner right now. That's pretty important too. Okay, here we go. So, consciousness stands alone, he says. The person and the world appear in consciousness. Oh, here's Nisargadatta is really questioning this guy in a very nice way. Nisargadatta says, you said appear. Because again, the devotee said the person and the world appear in consciousness. So Nisargadatta says, you said appear. Could you add disappear? So, you know, if we did that, we would say the person and the world disappear in consciousness, which means that consciousness is the reality. The person and the world are not. What appears disappears, right? You said appear. Could you add disappear? And the questioner says, no, I cannot. I can only be aware of my and my world's appearance. As a person, I cannot say the world is not. Without a world, I would not be there to say it. Because there is a world, I am there to say there is a world. So this person, again, the previous statement about consciousness was just something learned. You can tell that he's very, very certain that he's a person. So Nisargadatta says, maybe it is the other way around. Because of you, there is a world. And see, the man said, because there is a world, I am there. Like the world came first and then there were people. Which certainly, you know, if you believe the theory of evolution as truth, that would be true, right? First there was a world and then there was all of this evolution that occurred in this world and eventually humans came from it, right? So the world would be a cause and the human is an effect. But Nisargadatta says, maybe it's the other way around. Because of you, there is a world. You know, maybe the world is not the cause. Maybe consciousness, which is what you are, is the cause. The world could not be without you. And of course, this man is saying, I could not be if there wasn't a world. To me, the questioner says, such a statement appears meaningless. So the idea that because of you, there is a world is meaningless. Nisargadatta says, its meaninglessness may disappear on investigation. In other words, if you're really willing to look, and in this case, I would say, if you're really willing to meditate on yourself as consciousness, you may come to discover as a direct experience that the world exists in you and the world exists because of you. And we don't want to be like this questioner was a moment ago, spouting off, I am consciousness. You know, the world exists in me and the world exists because of me. That's just useless. It's useless to be attached to the idea that you're a person and spout off the idea that you're consciousness. So this investigation part is pretty important, finding out for yourself. You know, I always love how Nisargadatta says he trusted his guru, right? And did as his guru said. But the important part was he trusted his guru, but he didn't really know for himself. His guru told him, you know, you are not a person, you are consciousness, in whatever way his guru said that. Focus on the I am presence to the exclusion of all else, and you'll find out for yourself. And Nisargadatta, at that time, whatever his human name was, seeing himself as a person, trusted his guru enough to try it and find out for himself. And he trusted his guru enough to focus on the I am presence in all of his spare time. And in 3 short years, he awoke to the true self. So that's what he's really, really indicating when he says the meaninglessness, because again, the questioner said this idea that the world exists because of me, the questioner said that's a meaningless statement to him. And Nisargadatta says its meaninglessness may disappear on investigation. You know, why not find out for yourself? Do you have enough curiosity or do you have enough desire to try and find out if what these masters are teaching is true or not? You know, are you willing to do what they did so that you can find out for yourself? The questioner says, where do we begin? So maybe he has some willingness for this investigation. Nisargadatta says, all I know is that whatever depends is not real. The real is truly independent. Since the existence of the person depends on the existence of the world, and it is circumscribed and defined by the world, it cannot be real. Now, this is an insight that came to me. I don't remember exactly when. I was living back in North Carolina. Oh, wait, let me put a pillow behind my back. I'll be more comfortable. I'm teaching from bed because I'm here in La Vida at the condo, and you know, this is the only room that's truly mine, right? Like in the living room, my mom's out there. I don't know what she's doing, but she's out there. So when I teach here, I come in here and close the door. I do have a chair over there, but I sit in the bed. So if I put a pillow behind me, I'll be a little more comfortable. And now after I explained why I want a pillow, I forgot where I was. Let me look at this again. Oh, I remember. So I had this insight sometime when I was still living in North Carolina, so several years ago. But this insight came, you know, I think I was probably contemplating A Course in Miracles at the time. And A Course in Miracles says something that, you know, I would read it, but I didn't agree with it. I was just very much like this questioner. He's listening to Nisargadatta, but he doesn't agree with Nisargadatta. You know, A Course in Miracles said that the world does not exist. Excuse me, I'd like to show you guys my chest of drawers right here. Doesn't that sound like that exists? Right? Feels like it exists. You know, I couldn't buy into that stuff, that this world doesn't exist, nor could a lot of other people who read A Course in Miracles. But I had willingness, I had openness, and one day as I was contemplating, it came to me like a ton of bricks that I had been misdefining the word exist. I think I even looked it up in the dictionary. Let me see if this little cheap dictionary I have on my computer, because you know I have a bigger dictionary at home that has like multiple definitions. I don't know if this one will have the right definition of exist or not. Let's find out. Well, it says have objective reality or being. That's not really it. The definition that I ended up coming up with was exactly what Nisargadatta is saying here, that in order to have existence, true existence in this form of the word, it cannot be dependent on anything else. It has to exist on its own power. Those are the exact words that came to me. It has to exist on its own power. If it's dependent on something else, then it doesn't exist with that definition of the word exist. It doesn't mean, you know, I can't hit it. It's a different definition of the word exist. And that was pretty important for me because that changed everything. That meant, you know, before when A Course in Miracles would say that the world does not exist, I really thought it was trying to tell me I'm not experiencing a world. And, you know, that's baloney, right? If I stub my toe hard, I feel it, you know? So to try and tell me I don't experience a world is baloney. But when I realized that the world does not exist means it's dependent on another power. It doesn't have its own power. Well, that changed everything. Because, you know, if you look at a nighttime dream for a moment, you experience a nighttime dream. You know, if you're in high school in your dream and you're standing at your locker and everybody's laughing at you and you look down and realize you're naked, you feel that embarrassment, right? Do you guys have those dreams? I used to. I don't anymore, but I used to. You know, you feel that embarrassment. If there's something you're afraid of and you're running in the dream and the hallway just keeps getting longer and longer and longer, you feel that desperation because you're never going to get to the end of that hallway, right? And in fact, I can fly in my dreams. Can any of you guys fly? And sometimes I get physically tired because even though I can fly, it's actually a lot of work for me. It's not natural. I have to work really hard to fly. And so I can actually feel my tired muscles in my dreams. You know, so we experience our dreams, right? We experience them. But dreams do not exist. Whatever the dream is, it does not exist. It was dependent on the sleepy, dreamy, imagining mind. The mind kind of not in control, so just anything can happen. that stage of mind that happens in sleep. It's dependent on that. And if the mind is not in that state, where it's in that sleepy, dreamy, imaginary state, imagining state, the dream's not there. It's an output. So when A Course in Miracles says that the world does not exist, it doesn't mean that I don't experience it, because I clearly do. But it means it's dependent on something for its apparent existence. Right? And if you take that something away, the world also disappears. Just like if you take the dreamy state of mind away, the dream disappears. And that's exactly what Nisargadatta is saying here. He's defining existence in the same way. He says, all I know is that whatever depends is not real. Meaning, if it depends on something else for its apparent existence, it's not real. All I know is that whatever depends is not real. The real is truly independent, right? The real exists on its own power. It's not dependent on some other power for its existence. All I know is that whatever depends is not real. The real is truly independent. Since the existence of the person depends on the existence of the world, and it is circumscribed and defined by the world, it cannot be real. And again, he's already gotten this questioner to admit that the existence of a person is dependent on the world, right? That without a world, you can't have a person. So, a person cannot exist. A person cannot exist on its own power. If the world is destroyed, you know, a meteor hits the world and destroys it, what happens to the person? Can it continue to exist? No, it needs a world to exist, right? So it doesn't exist on its own power, therefore it's not real. The questioner says, it cannot be a dream, surely, right? Referring to his experience of being a person. It cannot be a dream. Nisargadatta says, even a dream has existence when it is cognized and enjoyed or endured. Whatever you think and feel has been, but it may not be what you take it to be. What you think to be a person may be something quite different. So, look at my lovely, lovely, actually very cheap chest of drawers again. All right. So Nisargadatta is now saying there may be a reality here, but the reality isn't chest of drawers. Right? Mm-hmm. But in order for a chest of drawers to appear, there has to be something. There has to be something, something that... You know, just like in order for a nighttime dream to appear, there has to be the imagining sleepy state of mind, right? If you don't have the imagining sleepy state of mind, you can't have a nighttime dream. Well, there's something. He hasn't defined what that something is, although I think, you know, we all have an idea. But there's something that does exist that enables this to appear to exist or appear to be a chest of drawers, right? There's something that does exist. So, even a dream has existence when it is cognized and enjoyed or endured. Whatever you think and feel has being, but it may not be what you take it to be. What you think to be a person may be something quite different. And so this questioner says, I am what I know myself to be. You know, so, you know, it's just kind of unfortunate. Again, I know you guys hear me say this like every week, but, you know, I just don't know why you would go to a master and ask him a question and then argue with everything he says. I just do not get it at all. Why not do something else that day, you know? I mean, why do this? But, you know, Nisargadatta is really giving this man, as far as I can tell, a lot of attention, considering the fact that he is, you know, continues to stick to his idea, I'm a person. He's giving him a lot of attention, which is really love. He's given this man a lot of love. And yet here we are at the end of the conversation, and the man is still saying, I am what I know myself to be. Well, Nisargadatta is not giving up on him yet. I now have a very, very long answer for Nisargadatta. In fact, it's probably one of the longest answers in this book. So let's see what Nisargadatta says. There's an exclamation point at the end of this, which if we know Nisargadatta, might mean he was shouting it. It's very possible this came out this way. You cannot possibly say that you are what you think yourself to be. Right, that's kind of how Nisargadatta was. So love may have just changed form a little bit. But I'll read it in a different way so maybe we can hear it. Because sometimes when you're shouted at, you don't hear. Is that true? It's funny. If I get really loud and shout at you, you know, you actually close up and you don't hear. You'll hear me much better if I'm softer and quieter, you know. So here we go. You cannot possibly say that you are what you think yourself to be. Again, this is a very long answer. But, you know, what really stands out to me in that first sentence is the word are and the word think. You know, you cannot possibly say that you are what you think yourself to be. He says, your ideas about yourself change from day to day and from moment to moment. And, you know, one example that I frequently use, because I think we've all experienced it, is one day, you know, I'm a really good driver. You know, maybe there was almost something, I got out of it with the car, and I'm a really good driver. And then another day, I'm not paying attention. I cut somebody off and they flip me off and, ooh, I'm a bad driver, right? Which is it? Are you a good driver or are you a bad driver? Are you smart or are you dumb? Are you attractive or are you fat and ugly? Are you healthy or are you sick? I mean, doesn't your mind tell you all of it, right? So which is it? Come on, make up your mind. So that's what Nisargadatta is really saying here. You cannot possibly say that you are what you think yourself to be. Your ideas about yourself change from day to day and from moment to moment. Your self-image is the most changeful thing you have. Wow, that's a heck of a sentence. Listen to this. Your self-image is the most changeful thing you have. I mean, all of our bodies have changed. My mom and I were talking a while ago, her 60th high school reunion is coming up. And so we were talking about how when she goes to her reunions now, she went to her 50th as well. She didn't even recognize her best friend because, you know, the bodies have changed so much since they were in high school that she didn't even recognize her best friend. So we all know that our bodies change, right? But our self-image changes faster than our bodies. In fact, our self-image can change from one moment to the next moment. Right? It's kind of like that scene in Revolver when Maka was at first all yelling at Lillian Walters, you know, being all tough, blah, 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 and then, oh, beg, right? He changed in a nanosecond, right? From a tough guy to, oh my gosh, beg. You know, the self-image is the most changeful thing you have. Now that's really profound if we think about it for just half of a second. How can we say, well, that's what Nisargadatta, I think, is yelling at this guy. How can we say, I am anything if it changes so quickly and so much? Right? So you cannot possibly say that you are what you think yourself to be. Your ideas about yourself change from day to day and from moment to moment. Your self-image is the most changeful thing you have. It is utterly vulnerable at the mercy of a passerby, right? Somebody walks by, glances at us a certain way, our self-image changes like that, right? Depending on whether they were looking at us like we were attractive or looking at us like we were ugly or being annoyed with us, or boom, our self-image changes. It is utterly vulnerable at the mercy of a passerby, a bereavement, the loss of a job, an insult, and your image of yourself, which you call your person, changes deeply. To know what you are, you must first investigate and know what you are not. So you have to see that you can't be all of the things that the mind says you are, especially since the mind doesn't agree from one moment to the next. And to know what you are not, you must watch yourself carefully, rejecting all that does not necessarily go with the basic fact, I am. I'll read that again. To know what you are not, you must watch yourself carefully, rejecting all that does not necessarily go with the basic fact, I am. You know, so really anything that we add to I am a great typist, right, is not true. It might be true that I type well and fast, right? That might be a skill that I have. I type well and fast. So yes, I can get this done for you. I said that to somebody last night, so I'm using this example. But to say I am a great typist, to have that identification, that's not who I am. I need to reject that as soon as I hear it coming out of my mouth. I am a great typist. No, I can type well and fast, right? Say it differently. And then Nisargadatta says, the ideas, I am born at a given place, at a given time, from my parents, and now I am so-and-so, living at, married to, father of, employed by, and so on, are not inherent in the sense I am. Right? So he's giving some very basic examples, but, you know, people identify with things, you know, so for example, I could say, I am the president minister of Awakening Together. And I could take that on like an identity, right? That's who I am. But that wasn't true. What? This is 19. We started. That wasn't true 7 years ago. 7 years ago, Awakening Together wasn't even a thought yet. But I existed 7 years ago. So can that be who I am? Or is that just a temporary role that I'm fulfilling now? You know, people identify with their roles, they identify with their skills, they identify with their history, with their memories, with their dreams, but they're none of those things. Our usual attitude is, I am this. Consistently and perseveringly separate the I am from this or that. Consistently, listen to these words, consistently and perseveringly separate the I am from this or that. Now, he's not saying just in 2 hours a day of meditation. He's saying consistently and perseveringly separate I am from this or that. So notice when you say things like, I am a great typist, or I am the vice president of Awakening Together, or I am a computer programmer, or I am, you know, whatever. And then go ahead and correct yourself right then, because you want to consistently and perseveringly make sure you're not identifying with these things. So correct yourself. Oh, wait, the job I work right now is computer programmer, right? Just correct yourself. Consistently and perseveringly, by the way, the job I work right now, if you really listen to those words, that means I know it's not permanent and I know it's not who I am, right? The job I work right now is dot, dot, dot. Consistently and perseveringly separate the I am from this or that and try to feel what it means to be. Just to be without being this or that. All our habits go against it and the task of fighting them is long and hard sometimes. But clear understanding helps significantly. The more clearly you understand that on the level of the mind you can be described in negative terms only, the more quickly you will come to the end of your search and realize your limitless being. Now that's an interesting statement. He says, on the level of mind, you can be described in negative terms only. Now, certainly my mind can tell me that I'm fat and ugly, but my mind can also tell me that I look pretty good. So is Nisargadatta wrong? Or does Nisargadatta mean that even when my mind's telling me I look pretty good, that that's actually negative? Because it's limiting me, it's telling me I'm less than what I really am. Even when my mind is telling me that I'm smart and kind and generous and beautiful, right? It's negative compared to the true self. It's always limiting me. It's always telling me that I am less than what I am. Again, Nisargadatta says, the more clearly you understand that on the level of the mind, you can be described in negative terms only, the more quickly you will come to the end of your search and realize your limitless being. Because the more clear, when I more clearly understand that everything the mind says of me is negative or, we could say putting me down, right? It's taking me, limitless being, and putting me down, saying I'm a limited being, right? And the more clearly I understand that even when the mind is being as lofty as it can be, telling me that I'm beautiful and smart and kind and generous and better than other people, it's still putting me down. The more I understand that, then the more I will be willing to not listen to any definition the mind makes of me. I'll kind of retire from listening to its definitions, whether they're to the human, they're positive or negative definitions. And I start seeking the truth of what I am, that limitless being that the mind doesn't tell me about. And so the more clearly I understand that everything the mind says about me is negative and really see it that way, quit seeing some of the stuff as positive and ego boosting, then the sooner I'm going to start the search to find the true self. I'm not going to be satisfied to be little and smart, or little and beautiful, or little and talented, right? Or little and organized, or little and responsible. I want to be limitless. I want to know myself. Yeah, and I think, I see Malcolm says, I thought he was talking about the neti-neti, like I am not this. And I think that he is. What he's pointing out is that you need to say that to everything except I am, right? Yeah, everything except I am, neti neti, which means, and again, a lot of people are, I think I heard Ann talk today about how hard it is to throw off even these negative self-images, right? But the reason that's funny about how hard it is to throw off the negative self-images is because we think we want to. We think we at least want to dump them. I at least want to dump my self-hatred. I at least want to dump, whatever. But most people have zero desire to dump what they perceive as their positive qualities, their positive self-images, right? And what he is really pointing out is you got to dump that too. You have to neti-neti that too. You can't just neti-neti, I'm a fat pig, right? You have to also neti-neti, I'm a beautiful, intelligent woman, if you're a woman, right? You have to neti-neti that too. Yeah. So we're done for tonight. So I'll text you a title in just a moment. And everybody have a wonderful evening. And I'll see you tomorrow, Jacqueline. Shauna, are you able to walk yet? A little bit. So maybe we won't see you then, since it's so hard to walk in the snow, huh? But well, no, you're right next door.
I'll drive over.
A drive over? Okay, good. All right. We'll see y'all.